Welcome to Underdog Stuff, the voice of the underdog, exploring how underdogs keep our swagger in today's society and culture. We get personal about the news and the culture from all the angles. And every episode of Underdog Stuff includes unavoidable news, the under the week, and the underdog spotlight. It's a big scoop of pop culture politics top with Swagger Back Commandments, hosted by Gregory Neesmith. That would be me. Underdog advocate, certified coach, published author, and out here helping underdogs get access to the people and resources they need on their come ups and their comebacks. It's time for Underdog Stuff. Today's episode, episode 93, Glass Cliffs, Black Ceilings, and Telling Your Story. I guarantee it'll all make sense before we get out of here. Today, we're going to talk about, is it really the year of the woman? It's a question that's been on my mind. Love to hear your thoughts. Is it really the year of the woman? Also, we'll talk about how we can all be like Michelle Obama. It's a bit of a reach. She's a dynamic woman, but we'll talk about there's at least one way we can all be like her. Also, I'll explain what the heck a glass cliff is. I know you heard about glass ceilings, but have you heard about the glass cliff? And then to close the show for the underdog spotlight, we have Minda Hartz coming through, and she'll talk about how she helps women of color prepare for a seat at the table in the workplace. Minda Hartz is an adjunct professor of public service of NYU's Robert F. Wagner's Graduate School of Public Service, and she's the founder of the Memo LLC, a career development company for women of color. Today's opening question, is it really the year of the woman? Like, really? You know, I'm asking for a friend. I'm asking for Deborah from Manhattan. I'm asking for Tanya from Harlem. I'm asking this question for my cousin Monique and Margie. I'm asking for Asha Davis. I'm asking for the Republicans who only had one woman for the first time join Congress this year, unlike the Democrats that had 35. I'm asking for Tarana Banks, who's out here doing her work with the Me Too movement. I'm asking for Minda Hartz, who's our special underdog spotlight guest today. Is it really the year of the woman? I'm asking for the women of color who want a seat at the table at work. Is it really the year of the woman? I'm asking for my mom, who when I was younger used to always remind me about the challenges of her being a twofer. And that meant that she was counted as both a woman and black. Is it really the year of the woman? You know, kind of like 2008 was supposedly the year of black folk. Remember back 2008? You know, the year of black folk, year of Obama, of the Obamas, the year of supposedly a post-racial America. How's that looking now? And I don't want to disparage the fact that there's been progress. There has been. And in 2008, having Barack Obama elected to the President of the United States, having a White House filled with Michelle and Barack, that's progress. But two things can be true at the same time. We can make progress and still be falling short of expectations. You know, I was reading the other day, an article came across that talked about violent crimes and how disproportionately over 53%, I believe it was reported, women that are murder victims are murdered by their domestic or intimate partner. It's crazy. And 98% of women who are victims of homicide are killed by men. And I believe 90% of all murders are actually committed by men. So, you know, you hear and read stats like that, and then I wonder, is it really the year of the woman when we still have things like that going on, and that I know my sisters, my cousins, things like that, people I know, lady friends of mine, that they're still in harm's way, even during the supposed 2018 year of the woman. And with that, though, there are what I would call some bright spots, right? There's some bright spots here and there. You have folks like Tarana Burke out here, who's an activist and founder of the Me Too movement, doing things to make progress, to get us closer to the expectation where women shouldn't have to worry about sexual harassment and assault.
We've spent the last year building programs and building this website and building partnerships with people who can hold that work. I don't have some like delusion that sexual violence will end in like the next decade. But I do think that in the next decade, we can shift through this work. We can shift how we talk about it. We can shift how we respond to it. We can shift how the culture understands it, because it's going to make a difference in the number of sexual assaults that we see. It's going to make a difference in the way people respond to survivors of sexual violence. And that difference is really everything. My great hope is that that's what this work will do. I mean, we have so much to do, and so many people are committed to doing it.
Shout out to folks like Tarana Burke, who are making sure that whether you think it's the year of the woman or not, that there's still progress being made. Also, in politics, there's been some progress. I believe for the first time ever in Congress, there will be over 100 women that are now part of being our leaders and lawmakers. That's progress. And then you have folks out here showing us about what it's like to really live our best lives, like Michelle Obama out here on her recent book tour, just showing us what it's like to be an awesome person and an awesome woman. She's on my mind because literally she's been in the New York area, and a lot of my lady friends I saw on my social media timelines, they were all up in the Becoming book tour and Michelle Obama doing her thing. And if you haven't heard, which if you're an underdog, I know you've heard this by now, but Michelle Obama just released her book called Becoming, and she is was able to become a New York Times bestseller. Her book Becoming has sold over 750,000 copies on its first day, day one. And then in the first week, it sold over 1.4 million copies. Just good stuff.
We actually had a blooper list of titles that we won't go into. Uh-huh. A lot of things that would be funny only to us. But Becoming just summed it all up. In the preface, you recall one of the things I say that is a question that adults ask kids that I hate. I think it's the worst question in the world, is what do you want to be when you grow up? As if growing up is finite, as if you become something and that is all there is. And my journey is the journey of always continually evolving, that there is never a point where you arrive at a thing. And if you do, that's kind of sad. You know, if you think that there is a point in your life where you stop growing and stop learning, that's sort of sad, because what else is left?
That's Michelle Obama giving us a little peek behind the curtain as to what inspired the name of the book and the theme of the book. And I do think she makes a very good point that there is something about always being in discovery, never letting the kid in us, so to speak, let that flame go out. And I feel her on that. I'm still becoming and still figuring out what I want to be when I grow up, as they say, and grateful that one of the things I get to do while I'm figuring that all out is be on the radio and podcasting with you underdogs out there every week. Voice of the underdog, doing what we do, exploring how underdogs keep our swagger in today's society culture. A little bit more about the book. It was released on November 13th. And one of the fastest selling memoirs of 2018. According to Crown Publishing, it holds the number one spot for adult nonfiction in Germany, France, Denmark, Holland, Spain, and even more. It's a worldwide success. And as I mentioned before, she's currently on book tour. And I know a lot of my people in the New York area actually saw her live, which is a big deal. Now, I said earlier in the opener of the show, there's one way we can all be like Michelle Obama. And I said, it's a bit of a reach. It may be hard to be as dynamic as she is, but with that said, right, we all got our thing. And you know how I end every show where I talk about can't nobody do it like you do it. So you can do your thing, Michelle can do hers, but one way we can all be like Michelle is we get to tell our story. And just like she launched a book, I encourage all of you out there that you get to write about your story too and share it. And while writing a book is hard, it is possible. And there's different steps to it, right? You got the beginning part where you start the writing. There's a staying motivated part when you're writing a book, and you may face some obstacles and things like that. But if you plan ahead for these obstacles, you can make it happen. Then, of course, finishing it, because, you know, at the end of the day, no one's ever cared about a book that wasn't finished. So you got to finish it once you start it. And the cool thing is, we're going to have someone on later today, Minda Hartz, who's going to talk about all the work she's doing with women of color and getting them their seat at the table in the workplace. And she's going to talk about that she has a book coming out too. And my question for you underdogs out there is that if you were going to be like Michelle Obama and you were going to write a book in 2019, what would be the name of your debut book? What would it be? I think if I was to write a book, two titles that come to mind would be How I Got My Swagger Back or The Swagger Back Commandments. I think that might be it. Let me know. If you were to write a book so you can get your Michelle Obama on and talk about your journey and your story, what would be the title of your book? Shout out to all the underdogs listening on Facebook Live. Shout out to Daryl, my brother from another, the 215 showing up in the 212. He says, what's up, G-Euro? And I say, what's up to you? Daryl, what would be the name of your book if you wrote one in 2019? Because that's one way we can all be like Michelle Obama. We can go out there and tell our story. And then also, underdogs, is it the year of the woman or not? You know, kind of like how 2008 supposedly was the year of black folks, the Obamas, and a post-racial society. How's that working out right now? You know my thoughts on it all. Two things can be true at the same time, right? Progress can be made. And 2008 was a wonderful year for black folks. And 2018 has been a wonderful year for women. And at the same time, big picture, we can still be short of expectations and still have so much more work to do. Orion says, progress isn't necessarily positive. We've got a progressive president, and I don't think she means it in the sense of progressive, like liberal progressive, just progressive in terms of pushing something forward. She says he's progressing the alt-right agenda. Hey, I hear you, Orion. Progress does not necessarily mean something positive. And with that said, I would take it a step further and go, progress also doesn't mean we've met expectations. And so I'm always curious to hear, folks, is this really the year of the woman or not? I still got folks like Tarana Burke out here fighting for the Me Too movement. Republicans only elected one new woman to the House of Representatives this year, in a year where Democrats elected 35. So last time I checked, even though I'm not a Republican, they still make up a decent portion of the America. Did they not get the memo on the year of the woman? I'm just curious, like, you know, 2018, year of the woman, kind of like 2008 was the year of black votes. Let me know. Shout out to all the folks listening online, because I want to know, is it the year of the woman? I'm asking for a friend. I'm asking for my mom. I'm asking for our guest, Minda Hartz. I'm asking for the women of color who want a seat at the table. I'm curious, is it really the year of the woman or not? Because somebody told me 2008 was the year of a post-racial America. And I haven't seen it. Just me. Maybe I'm the only one. You know, we talk underdog stuff here. So I want to know. Shout out to Orion who says, preach. We're going to talk about it. All right. With that, quick under the week. And then I want to get our guests in here so we can talk about all these topics. Under the week, I was getting ready for this convo with Minda Hartz, professor at NYU. She's also the founder of The Memo. Her whole thing is about making sure women of color are prepared to have a seat at the table. And while I was researching and looking up things like glass ceilings and black ceilings, I also found this other word or phrase called glass cliffs. So this week, the under of the week, the un stands for uncover. And this is what I found out about this thing called glass cliffs. Who's ever heard of glass cliffs? This is what it's about.
When a struggling organization hires a female executive to lead, she inherits a crisis. When this happens, a woman executive faces especially tough challenges. And when the mission at hand is too hard to accomplish, she can be forced out and replaced with a white male executive. And that's what researchers at PricewaterhouseCoopers call a glass cliff. Their study revealed that although there's a growing number of corporations that have hired female CEOs over the last 10 years, more of them are forced out of the executive suite than men, 38% versus 27%. Another study by Utah State University revealed that in a majority of cases, Fortune 500 companies replaced women and minority CEOs with white men. Out of 608 transitions that took place between 1996 to 2010, the study showed that women, or minority CEOs, replaced other non-traditional CEOs on only 4 occasions.
Whew! You know, the glass ceiling is notoriously hard for women in leadership to shatter. And then once they shatter, it turns out there might be a cliff. Basically, what this is that women can rise to leadership, but when they are brought in to turn a failing company around, they have to take the blame if things don't go well. They've managed to break through the glass ceiling, then unfortunately get pushed off the glass cliff. And there's been multiple studies on this. It's been reported that white women, along with men and women of color, are more likely than white men to be promoted to CEOs of weakly performing firms. They tend to stay in the CEO position about as long as potentially white men, but then are more likely to be replaced by white men. And some of this phenomenon happens for a lot of reasons. The majority of Fortune 1000, Fortune 100 companies have CEOs that are men already off the bat. And sometimes when a tough job comes open, it's been reported that white men get to kind of pick and choose and go, you know what, that position that's open, that's a tough one. I might pass. I'm going to wait for something better to come along. But if you're a woman of any race, or if you're a man of color, you're like, I don't know when another job going to open up. I'm going to take this one, even if it's a terrible one, because what other CEO position is out there? So we then take the risk. And unfortunately, it doesn't always seem to pay off. And that's what the term means, that you can have this breakthrough, get to where you want to get to, then all of a sudden you're just off the cliff and gone. It's tough. It's tough. And the mindset around this is normally when there is a crisis and a company's not doing well, oftentimes folks want to send a message to Wall Street and to their investors and to their employees by picking, let's say, a woman who is seen as being totally different than normally the man that she is replacing. And so it's tough. And this happens also in politics. Now, with that said, if this does happen in politics, shout out to Kamala Harris, or maybe even Elizabeth Warren. Maybe the country people will think America's in such a funky place that they want to go completely opposite and think they were in trouble. And maybe we'll get our first woman president as a result. With that said, though, there have been some bright spots. There are some women of any race, and then also men of color also, that end up making these things work out and turning things around. But it's tough. It's tough. And one of the things I've heard that can be a solution is obviously, or at least progress, is that as we see more and more women and more people of color in these CEO positions, that we become more used to it as a society. And then hopefully over time, men and women of color will get opportunities for the companies that are doing well too, to be CEOs in those roles. With that though, before we can get to a glass cliff, you got to break through the glass ceiling, especially if you're a woman. Now it's time for the underdog spotlight. And we have with us Minda Hartz. She is an adjunct assistant professor of public service of NYU's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. Say that one more time.
Hey.
I'm mad at you. She is the founder of the Memo LLC, a career development company for women of color. In 2016, she was nominated as a changemaker at the White House State of Women Summit. And this year, she was named one of 25 emerging innovators by American Express. And I'm not done yet. But wait, there's more. Minda, just like Michelle Obama debuted her book Becoming in fall of 2018, well, Minda Hartz is going to be debuting her book The Memo, and it'll be coming out in the fall of 2019 with the Hatchet Book Group. Minda Hart, thank you for joining Underdog Stuff.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Well, you know, we're going to talk about a bunch of things on glass cliffs, black ceilings, glass ceilings, telling your story. And I think that you are perfect to have that discussion. But before we jump into it, I like to ask all guests who come on, when I say the word underdog, what comes to mind for you?
Wow. Well, thanks for having me, first and foremost. And when you say the word underdog, I think about when I entered this world. I was a premature 3-pound baby, and I'm still here, still fighting for the seat, securing my seat. And being an underdog is the continuous fight and making sure that you just keep pushing. And so I was thinking about the show this morning, and I thought, you know what, Minda, you were 3 pounds, you fit in the hand of the nurses in the ward, and you are still fighting. And so that's what underdog, you know, just that continuous fight, that spirit of fight inside of you.
I love that. And the world is happy that you're here with us.
Me too. Praise God.
Hey, yes, indeed. And I love the idea of that you're a fighter. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is, you don't just fight for yourself. You don't just fight for your family, but you fight for the community, yes, specifically women of color. Now, with that, though, I looked up your bio and it's all these wonderful things, but I went to your IG. And your IG, I think that's where people, they kind of, you got to say what you do, and you got to say it in like a few words on your bio. And it says, career revolutionary for women of color at work. I love that.
Thank you.
But what I'm curious about is, what was that moment personally for you that sparked this mission of yours to go out and fight for women of color in the workplace?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we all have our kind of like come to Jesus moments, or many of us do, right? If we're lucky enough to figure out what our purpose is in this world. And mine happened around the Trayvon Martin verdict. And I was just sick when all of that came down, just like, you know, the rest of the world, majority anyway. And I thought, you know what, I can't quit my job. I can't go to the various locations in March and those sorts of things. But what can I do with what God has given me and my skill set? And so I was working in, working in corporate America, nonprofits. And so I thought, what can I do? What's the skill set that I have that can help the next generation? And I thought, you know what, I can use my advocacy for helping other women of color move forward in the workplace. And so that's how I said, you know, what can I do? And I thought about Shirley Chisholm. If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And then I also thought about Drake. Did they not get the memo? And I'm like, you know what? Let's make this happen. Let's make sure that the world gets the memo. We belong at the table.
I love it. Now, what about Solange, though?
Yes. And of course, that just solidifies it, right? Whenever I'm like feeling some kind of way, I just turn on Solange and I'm like, yes.
Yeah, because I always think now when I hear this, I think of seat at the table, obviously. Yep. Shout out to Solange. With that, one of the ways that you bring your purpose to life is an initiative called the Women of Color Equity Initiative. If you could just tell folks a little bit about what is that? How does your mission come to life, at least in one way, through that?
Right. So the memo I run with my co-founder, Lauren, and we have what we call, you know, the memo, the career platform that helps women of color, help them prepare for their seat at the table. And as we know, women of color are out there doing their thing. We've been leaning in. And so my thing is, if you look at the reports that Forbes and McKinsey and all these different articles are coming out with, they show that women of color lack executive roles or mid-management or even entry-level positions. And I said, you know what, how can I catalyze the work that we're doing at the memo and marry access and opportunity within the workplace and change the numbers that keep being reported out? We're not lagging behind because of anything that we're not doing. And so I'm like, if you have the access to the opportunity, then maybe we can change these numbers. And so the Women of Color Equity Initiative is me going to companies and saying, hey, you say you want women of color, you say you cannot find them. Well, I have this, you know, database full of women. Let's put them in these positions. But not only that, let's make it equitable. Let them have opportunities once they get here. It's not enough just to have your seat at the table, but what's happening once they get in the door. And so making it equitable. And that's why I chose to call it the Equity Initiative, because once you get in the door, you deserve to be happy and thriving, not just surviving. And so that's what that's about.
I love that, because I've seen it. For folks who may not know, and I don't talk about it as often, but I spent 16 years in corporate America before I started doing all this underdog stuff. And I've seen it firsthand. And just being employed or hired and recruited isn't enough.
No.
What about retention and what about advancement and things like that? And you mentioned stats. I saw that you reported that about 11% of women of color hold managerial positions, but less than 8% hold senior management roles. Those numbers aren't good.
They are not good, especially when you think about, well, let's take African-American women, for example. They say that we are make up about 14% of the population. That's not even reflective in most companies. I went, took it a step further and looked at Fortune 500 companies and who's at the helm, right? We have no African-American women leading any Fortune 500 companies, and we have only ever had one. So there's an issue, and it's not because we're not leaning in. It's because companies are not leaning into us.
Yeah, and I believe, was it Ursula from...
from Xerox.
From Xerox. And she left, I believe, two years ago. 2 years ago, and we haven't had someone since. Whew. So earlier we were talking about glass cliffs, which, you know, it's a gift and a curse, right? Awesome that someone has made it to the CEO position, and then unfortunately that maybe their time there may be short.
Right.
But before you can even get to the glass cliff, you got to break through a glass ceiling. And before you can get there, you got to get started. For the underdogs out there, especially the women of color who are just getting started in their come up in their professional career, what's at least one thing that you've learned from the work you do that would help them start to prepare for that C-suite seat at the table?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to give you two quick things. And one is more of a tangible thing, and that's build out your network, because we talked about access to opportunities. If you don't have a network that you can tap into, so go to the meetup groups, go to the professional development trainings, make sure that you get out there and that you don't just go, but you meet people. Give out your business card, exchange LinkedIn, make sure that people get to know you and articulate what it is you want to do in the world. So when they have an opportunity, they think of you. But then the next thing is, we have to see ourselves at the table before we're even there. So we can't tell ourselves no before we get there. So just because there's no more Ursulas at the table at the moment doesn't mean that you're not the next one. So see yourself, start preparing. What do CEOs do now? If you're an admin assistant, start positioning yourself to, if you were working as the CEO, what do you need to equip yourself with? So is that certain training, certain certifications? Start doing it now so that they give you no reason to say no when it's time to apply for that.
No, I love that. It's a tangible one, and mindset is important, right? Because all things are created twice.
Yes.
First in our head and then in reality. Just one follow-up on that. Where do you go to get that confidence at?
It's a journey, man.
But, I'm like, can I go buy that somewhere this afternoon?
Well, you know, the late Audre Lorde, she said, I am deliberate and afraid of nothing. And I have to continuously remind myself that each and every day, every intention, everything that I'm deliberate about, yes, I might be afraid, but I can't own that, you know, or as they say, oh, the angry Black woman syndrome. No, that's their narrative. That's not my narrative. So they may not have us in the room now, but I'm preparing. I'm going. I'm getting that seat. And so I have to keep reminding myself. So once you keep telling yourself that self-talk, it goes a long way. So just start today. Start right now. You are more than enough.
I love it. And to the point about the angry Black woman thing, and I remember sometimes my mom coming home and talking about how she was being misperceived. Guess what? Sometimes there's stuff to be angry about.
Well, Solange said that. We got a lot to be mad about.
Come on now. Some of those numbers we talked about earlier. Now, that's for people who are at the start of their career.
Right.
What about a woman of color, an underdog out there who is now, you know, a decade in or so? Maybe she's right on that point of she's going to either have to step out and leave, or she's going to cross the finish line. Well, not finish line, but get to that senior management position to the C-suite. What's one thing that she should know to really get to that next level?
You know, oftentimes, lately I've had a lot of women reach out to me, women of color, but also white women, talking about ageism and how, you know, I'm 60 years old and I still have a lot of fight left in me. What am I going to do? And I said, you know, you keep pushing. Don't let people force you out. But sometimes we have to also decide that, is this the table for us, right? Mm-hmm. We work so hard for this particular company and they're never going to give us what we want. So we have to be introspective and say, you know what, am I going to get what I need? You know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Am I going to get what I need at this particular place? And if not, then you got to chuck up the deuces and go somewhere else. But also before you leave, make sure you articulate to the powers that be what it is you want, because sometimes we think, Gregory, that our managers have these magic balls, right? That they know exactly what we want out of our position. And if you haven't articulated that, then make sure they know that you want to move up. They might just think, oh, Susie, she loves that role. You know, she never wants to leave, but you do. And so tell them what you want, articulate your need. And if they don't provide you a roadmap, then you got to find the right space for you.
No, I love that. And you brought up management. And I do want to touch on management just for a hot second, though. Because one of the things every week, I do a show from an underdog's perspective. And there's all these things that I have to do, you got to do. I tell the underdogs, we got to do this. We got to be smarter. We got to be strategic. We got to love ourselves. We got to do all this stuff. And then it's like, well, what do the other people have to do? And so for a minute, especially for the underdog advocates listening right now, or folks who aren't a person of color, and for folks who might be in a position to make a difference in these workplaces, what's something they got to do?
Hey, I'm glad you brought it up, because we're doing everything we can on our end, but it takes two, right, to make a thing go right.
Yes, indeed. So... it takes two to make a... Yeah, we've covered Solange, Drake.
Yes, yes.
And now Rob Bass. I love it.
So if you are in a position of power, look around the room, see who is not being represented at the table. And I know that if you look out from your ivory tower, there are people that you could give opportunities to. And that's the difference between having the access and not. So, you know, if it's someone underrepresented and they can do the job and they can do it well, why not take a chance on them? Somebody took a chance on you. So don't go with the safe choice or what they told you to do. Go out there and give people opportunities to succeed, because again, we were all in that position at one point, and somebody gave us that leg up, right? So do that for somebody else.
Yeah. I say it again.
Hey, when you secure your seat, it's up to you to help other people get in the room too.
Come on now. I could just play that on loop a couple times. With that though, one of the hot topics going on in the world right now is the fact, especially in New York City area, is that Michelle Obama was in the area.
I know. I'm still hurt that I didn't get
to. I was about to say, I was like, Minda, like, why weren't you there?
I was traveling and all this other stuff, and I'm just sad that I wasn't there, but I was there in spirit.
Hey, and for folks don't know, which I'm sure you know because you listen to the show Underdogs, I know you know this, but Michelle Obama released her book November 13th called Becoming, and it's been a big hit, and now she's out on tour. And so she dropped a book, and earlier in the show, I asked folks, the one way we could all be like Michelle Obama, which is hard to do, mm-hmm. but we could all write a book and tell our story.
Yes.
And I asked Underdogs out there what would be the name of their debut book. Mine would be The Swagger Back Commandments.
Oh, I like that.
And that's something I get to work on for 2019. And then that brings me to you. Michelle Obama drops fall of 2018, already dropped. And word on the street is you're going to be dropping a book in fall of 2019. Is that true?
That is true. That is true.
What's the name of your book going to be about? And if you had to tell people in like a one sentence, one liner so they can get it, what's it about?
So the book is called The Memo, Securing Our Seat at the Table. And it's just about what it's like for women of color to lean in. So Sheryl Sandberg had her version and I have mine.
Ooh. Okay. So now I want to know a little bit more, because now you know you name dropping about Sheryl Sandberg is cool and all, and you know, and then there's an even deeper level of relatability that you might bring from your perspective.
Right. So to be fair, Sheryl Sandberg wrote this highly successful book about women in the workplace, but she wrote from a perspective of a white woman, and so I kind of flip it on its head and say, well, women of color, we and working class white women, we've been leaning in, and that those tips are not necessarily helpful for us. And so here's what it's like when we lean in, and we can't lean in without talking about race. And so I tackled that.
I love it. You know, I was talking to you earlier before we got on air that folks who are talented, and you are super talented, end up being able to do like everything. You got the talent skill. So you are writing this book. You have a company, you have this initiative that's going, and you also have a podcast. So normally when I ask this question, I don't even know what people are going to say, but what are some of the projects that you have going on? And then how can people work with you?
Yeah, so if you go to the memo, and if you're a woman of color and you need extra support, resources, work with us. I mean, we're there for you, so you don't feel, you might feel isolated being the only one in the workplace, but you don't have to feel that way going forward. So we're there to help. But right now, the Women of Color Equity Initiative is truly important to me, because it actually marries the skill set that many women of color out there already have, and they just need the opportunity to move forward. And so if you're a woman of color, you're looking for employment to push yourself forward, then join the initiative, add your name to the database. But if you're a company and you want more women of color, listen, we're out here, and let's make it happen.
I love that. And for folks who want more Menda Hearts, and they should want more Menda Hearts.
I hope so.
Who is talking about CEOs, is a CEO and works, obviously he's founder of The Memo, and also out here, you know, creating your own table and then also making sure folks have access to theirs. How can people follow you and get more Menda Hearts in their life?
Yes, MendaHearts.com. If you go there, you can link to everything I'm doing. I'm most active on Twitter at Menda Hearts. So, you know, we're in this game together. It's about creating seats for other people, and that's what I'm here to do.
Cool. Menda Hearts, I want to thank you for coming through and talking underdog stuff and talking how women of color can have a seat at the table, break these glass ceilings, and then also avoid this glass
cliff.
Thank
you, Gregory.
With that, thank you to all the underdogs for listening, commenting, calling. Special shout out to Deborah, James, Tanya, Daryl, some of our favorite listeners. Also, shout out to the live show producer, Megan, and the podcast editor, Kayla. The podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher, Google Play. Search Underdog Stuff. And you can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter by going to GregoryNeesmith.com and pressing subscribe. With that, as always, I leave you with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.